can't tell if the chemistry's good by looking at it. It wasn't clear yesterday. For the last time, the saltwater pool is a chlorine pool.
This is the Talking Pools Podcast with pool pros from every region in the country. If it happens in a pool, you'll hear about it here. Everything from tips and hacks to the latest tricks and trends. Breaking news, we lay it on the line. We tell it like it is because we think you deserve to know.
Make your voice heard. Join the Council for the Model Aquatic Health Code. Lend your expertise to the MAC, science-based guidance from the CDC, and the only all-inclusive national pool code that addresses current aquatic issues. Learn more at cmac.org. That's cmahc.org.
Hey everyone, it's Tuesdays with Kelly and Dan. Hey Dan.
Hey Kelly, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. It's a sunny day and daylight savings started, so I got an extra hour of work in today.
An extra hour, isn't that great? I don't like when the winter time and the darkness and all the rest of it, so the extra hour is definitely a blessing for us here in the Midwest. And I was up in Wisconsin yesterday, and We had the Chicago usually gets 25 to 30 inches of snow each winter. And this winter, I don't think we've had four. It's been relatively mild.
Snow that we have?
No, I don't want it all. But so I drove, you know, maybe 3 hours north to Madison yesterday. And although it was bright and sunny, they've got snow all over the place, just 3 hours north. It's kind of crazy. So.
Yeah, here in the mountains this week, we are close to 600 inches.
600. Wow.
And I saw a video today. A tow company did like a TikTok of these people driving their Tesla, Land Rover, or whatever it is, and a Lexus, and another car. And they're just driving down the road, and then they put their brakes on, and then their car just slid backwards. And they hit each other all at different times, too. So you'd see one crash and then another one come by and then it happened to them and then so on.
Wow.
And you heard the tow truck driver saying, take your foot off the brake. And they didn't. They just continued on. So it's pretty bad here.
Well, at least those are inexpensive cars to mess up. So Tesla, Land Rover.
A Lexus.
Lexus maybe, but
they said like $250,000 in vehicle.
Sure. Nice. Great. Well, so we are very happy to have a couple of guests with us today, which is unusual for us. We usually don't.
Yes.
Rudy doesn't like us interacting with other people because, you know, we're kind of kept in the basement and, you know, out of the way. But we do, we have Christy and Dewey from CMAC with us today to I guess just help all of our listeners know all that there is to know about what the Council for the Model Aquatic Health Code is, what they do, why they're important, and why we're important to them. And with that point, you know, we are fortunate, Kelly and myself, to be partners, if you will, with CMAC, and you guys are sponsoring our show, and we certainly try and do what we can to get the word out about you guys, and you know, that knowledge is power, and I think that this is one area that everybody could do a little bit more to help promote all that you folks do and what the Model Aquatic Health Code is all about. So I guess I would like to start by, if you guys could just give us a little background as to what is the Model Aquatic Health Code, where does it come from, and what does the committee do? So who wants to run with that very short question there?
I'll
go ahead. So the Model Aquatic Health Code came about because the CDC was getting a lot of people reaching out saying, we need a code. We need a model code to help guide us. You know, a lot of pool codes are outdated. People are reaching out to us. They need guidance. And so the CDC owns the Model Aquatic Health Code. They got they had groups, a consortia of people come together from industry, academia, public health, just, you know, all operators, industry folks. So they all came together and, you know, there were several committees, a lot of breakout sessions. I know Dewey was on some of those committees that from the beginning. And the first edition came out in 2014, which is when the Council for the Model Aquatic Health Code was established. And so we work in conjunction with the CDC to help keep the code updated. We manage the vote on the code, the 3-year cycle of update, which we're getting ready to launch, you know, and open that up in April. And I'll let Dewey talk more about that. So that's really how the Model Aquatic Health Code came about and how the CMAQ got involved. So we work really close with the CDC.
I like that the CDC actually wanted the input of people in that field instead of just coming up with their own stuff that they feel is the way things should be, when in reality, sometimes when they come up with stuff, it's not realistic.
Yeah. Well, you know, when the MAC was first going through its development stages, and work really started as far back as 2007, so almost 7 years before the first edition was released, it's really mind-numbing, right? Because when you go through some of these things, you go through the participant list and stuff like that, you'll see, this is an over-exaggeration, obviously, right? This is not entirely accurate, but you'll see 20 people, 30 people, 40 people, right? So the list for similar products, it's not huge, right? What's cool about the MAC was 14 different committees overseen by a steering committee, so 15 committees, right? Over 140 professionals from all aspects contributed to this first edition of the MAC. And even cooler was the very first edition, before it was released, received over 2,500 public comments.
Wow.
Wow.
So really, I mean, the MAC was created, you know, by the CDC with everybody involved, right? It's a public health document, you know, but the CDC realized that, you know, they're not filter design experts, right? They right. don't know much about radiuses for walls, you know? So they put together the folks that, you know, needed to work on it. And they got really this broad impact and broad feedback. It was really, I was part of that on the Lifeguarding Invader Supervision Committee. And I tell you, it was interesting and it was cool and it was challenging and it was fun. And it had its moments, right? But, you know, when you have all of these different people putting in different ideas and trying to parse through science and try to figure out what science actually is and exists and for any particular topic, or what's just kind of a best practice based on the minds of these people put together. It's really cool.
I love that, because being in organizations that I've been a part of, it's been very, very difficult to get that feedback from anybody. You kind of like literally have to like hold them by their neck and be like, tell me something. So to be able to get people to be that involved, that would be like so incredible to watch.
So I think I heard you say that it was basically 7 years from the onset of this until the first MAC was released. Did I hear that right?
Yep, 7 years in various stages of development. I forget the name of the conference, but the actual origins of the MAC, as far as the idea, go back to 2005 at a... one particular conference, I should know it out of hand, but I just don't, right, that the CDC held. And then work actually started getting the steering committees put together in all that minutia detail stuff 7 years before Mac was done.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only imagine and 140 people involved in the process in all the different areas, and to, you know, in anything that you do. I've been part of PHCA all the way back to NSPI, and have worked on our service manual that we use for certifications and revisions to it on a couple of different occasions. And even though you have different committees working on different parts of it, parts overlap. You need to make sure that everyone has got the same position when you're putting something together. So I can imagine with 140 people and all of this going on, as to some of the conversations to come to a consensus on the data and everything to put it together had to be just a huge challenge. Yeah. And Dewey, you're the technical director, I guess, for the CMAQ, right? So you know that carries a whole lot of you know, like oversight to all of kind of what I'm talking about, making sure that the pieces all fit together and that there isn't anything that goes astray and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to take too much credit for that, right? I mean, my particular role is more honestly technical focused, and you know, kind of trying to make the bits fall into place. But really, I mean, it's really a whole team effort, right? I can't do my little bit without Christy doing her bit, without our 13 members, Jill and Susan, doing their bits, you know, without CDC providing feedback and input, you know, and in various ways. It really is, you know, to make this thing happen, right? That it's not just one person. It truly is a team effort.
Sure, sure. And I guess I should throw out too that Christy, you're the executive director. Is that correct?
Correct.
So,
yes.
So you're the one that's keeping everyone in line, right? You got the ruler on the knuckles and all that kind of stuff to make sure they're behaving and playing nice in the sandbox and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have that problem. Everybody plays nice, but I make sure that we're being fiscally responsible and all that good stuff. Definitely.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's and so we've got changes that just are happening now, right? Just being put out this year to what's going out there. I know I've been following a little bit in terms of some changes with cyanuric acid relative to DPD, and what are some of the key changes that have come through for 2023?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I'm afraid we may not have, you know, all the time in the world to talk about that. It's a lot. So the fourth edition MAC was just released. With COVID and some other issues, it was a couple of years overdue, right? It was actually originally due out in 21. But this little thing called COVID-19 reared its ugly head and chaos ensued. So we felt the impacts of that all the way through 22. So the fourth edition was just released, right, of the MAC. And there are a lot of changes. Now, most of them are on the smaller side. And little minor tweaks, right? So, for example, barrier versus enclosure, right? Changing that language. Another is there's a line in the MAC, a reference line, that's seen about 30 places or so that refers to, you know, local, state, federal law that was added to include tribal and territorial, right? So there's a lot of small changes like that. You know, some of the big stuff that was really talked about and really discussed was, you know, APH. So to help maximize disinfection, a change request was submitted to lower the minimum pH down to 7.0 versus 7.2. Yeah. Which that one's kind of cool, right? Because this was originally submitted for the third edition, but it was 6.8. And which would have been great for disinfection, but would have avoided every manufacturer warranty out there.
Yeah.
So we you know, the submitter kind of learned from that and came back and resubmitted. And, you know, now lo and behold, we have 7.0, which is, again, great for disinfection, doesn't void any warranties, right? So that was really cool. There's some restructuring that went on where we moved some things out to a new section called special venues. And that is currently the home for flotation tanks. And that's also going to be the home for any novel venues, right? So right now we're working on a guidance document with CDC and assisting with that for surf venues and artificial swimming lagoons, which if you haven't seen them, if you haven't looked them up, I encourage every listener to do it just for the sheer cool factor, right? You know, I'm a pool guy, Dan Kelly, you're pool folks too. These things are bonkers, man. I mean, yeah. We're talking about millions of gallons of water.
Yeah.
And it looks like a pool and it sounds like a pool, but these ain't for your 25-year-old CPO that's been working on pools for 5 years at all.
No.
But, you know, those are really cool venues that we have a placeholder section for them for section 7. So a little bit of restructuring there, right? I've kind of danced around and saved the most interesting stuff last. And let me say this, too. There were 322 roughly change requests that were approved.
Oh, wow.
And accepted by our voting membership, our board of directors, and by CDC, out of 530.
Wow.
It
was a beast.
Yeah.
So we're kind of cherry picking a couple in here, but honestly, most of them are boring. They really are. I mean, they're important, you know, and they're great for public health, but they're an absolute snooze fest to talk about, to be honest. So the elephant in the room was always the cyanuric acid aspects.
Right.
Which, you know, before I die, I'll write a book on that process and I'll sell it to every pool professional. And my wife and I will go and buy a house in Alaska or somewhere and just be a recluse. Because it really was interesting. So on the cyanuric acid side, there's a couple of things that happened. One was we had a lot of CRs, change requests that were submitted on cyanuric acid. And we found out very quickly that, you know, you're either for it or against it, and you tend to be passionate about it on either side, and there's not a whole lot of middle ground. And there was a lot of passion that was brought out on cyanuric acid. Ultimately, what made it into the code is an operating ratio, and the operating ratio was 45:1, meaning that for every one part per million of chlorine, you're allowed up to 45 part per million cyanuric acid.
Wow.
And this came out of work that a committee was formed, the Chlorine Stabilizers Ad Hoc Committee. Not a cool name, right? But they started working in 2016, and they worked for 4 years. Meeting on average every 2 weeks, on average every couple of hours for every meeting. And there was a number of folks in the industry that were participating. You couldn't have got people who didn't know cyanuric acid, didn't know chemistry, didn't know disinfection. You couldn't have found anybody who knows this stuff more than this group. You know, whether you agree with them or don't, whatever your stance is, these were the people. And, you know, I'll tell you, I mean, I'm a good old boy from Mississippi, and I'm a pretty smart cat, right? But these folks, they're in a whole nother league. I mean, they were, kind of entertaining for the show, right? And just kind of having fun. It's, you know, in all due seriousness, these folks are just blazingly brilliant, blazingly so. And it was really an honor, you know, when it's all said and done, to just be in the room and just listen to them talk and listen to them debate. And they were excellent. They were professional and they were smart. And so their work resulted in a white paper or a paper that was written and released in Water, an academic journal. A journal. I don't know if it's academia or just a general scientific journal, but it was published in Water, and it was talking about this ratio, right? Well, a gentleman named Richard Falk, with the assistance of this committee, created a model, and basically the model brought in a whole bunch of different parameters, but one of them was relative risk, right? And so to define relative risk in these terms, they use Giardia, right? And we can talk about why they did, or, you know, did they use Giardia? Should they use crypto? All that fun stuff, you know, and all that. You know, there's some debate to be had there, you know, but kind of the idea was Giardia is going to be a very, very common enteric pathogen, right? And so they selected Giardia for this pathogen. And they found that in this range, right, the specific range was like 18 to 43 or something like that. It wasn't a nice round number. But generally, in this range of 1 to 20 to 1 to 45, right, again, 1 part per million chlorine, 2, 20 part per million cyanuric acid, 45 part per million cyanuric acid, they found that the risk of contracting or becoming infected or becoming ill with this enteric based pathogen was stable, right? Meaning that it was no riskier at the higher end of this range or the lower end of this range. Now, what was really cool is once you started going above 45 part per million, 1 to 45, the relative risk aspect just fell apart, right? It got crazy numbers, and it absolutely was not stable, except for this little window between roughly 20 and 45. So that was really, really interesting, right? So there were individuals that were more interested in the lower range of cyanuric acid, right, as being a limiting threshold. There were some that were more interested in, you know, the higher range of the ratio being a limiting threshold. From inside the committee, from outside the committee, you know, from all parties involved and all interests and all stakeholders. But ultimately, the ratio settled on as far as recommending to membership and the CMAC board and the CDC was this 1 to 45 ratio. You know, and could you make the scientific argument to go lower? Absolutely, right? But the MAC has really two cool principles, right? And number one is you have to account for the financial aspects, right, and the financial impact. So unless there's just blazingly clear, obvious, bonkers level, indisputable, incontrovertible evidence that you have to do this thing that's going to have a massive financial impact, you know, that's a self-limiting factor inside the MAC, right? The MAC will never say that every pool out there must have a regenerative DE filter. Yeah. You know, even though you can...
Kelly and Dan will be right back after these messages.
Have you heard there is a group of pool service professionals nationwide that are here to help grow and protect your business? The Independent Pool and Spa Service Association, known as IPSA, is here to help you. By joining the largest trade organization created by and for pool and spa service techs, you gain access to industry networking opportunities, exclusive educational offerings, IPSA's Tech for Tech route coverage, and more. So be independent, supported, and part of a professional community. Go to IPSSA.com to learn how to be a member of IPSA today.
Make the argument that the science kind of says that, right, in a lot of different ways. Obviously, superior water quality. Ambergee from North Carolina, UNC, North University of North Carolina, has done some interesting research and finds that a regenerative DE filter will actually remove cryptosporidium, right? So even in the light of that, the financial impacts are so wild and so extreme that it would cripple and upend the industry. So that would never be allowed in because of those financial aspects, right? So similar to that with cyanuric acid, right? If we start banning cyanuric acid, or if we had this crazy low number, there were some very real financial concerns about water replenishment in the Southwest in the middle of a drought, labor, you know, man outs for facilities that are using stabilized chlorine compounds, you know, all of those financial things that had to be accounted for, right? So that was one reason to go to 1 to 45. And the other really, really cool philosophy that the MAC lives and breathes by is evolution, not revolution. So again, we're not, you know, the MAC does not want to come in, the CDC, the MAC, and certainly not us. Nobody wants to come in and be the next VGB.
No.
Nobody wants to do that, right? The MAC doesn't want to do that. And, you know, so one of the inherent properties of the MAC, right? And it's not really codified. You're not going to find a line in it that says, you know, thou shalt, you know, have revolution versus evolution, whatever, right? You know, you're not going to find that in there. But from the very beginning, from the origins of the MAC, it was always evolve, evolution. We're not here. The MAC doesn't exist to upend the industry. The MAC doesn't exist to cause chaos. It's a stabilizing agent, right? It gives public health officials the resources that they don't have access to, the research they don't have access to, right? It gives builders and designers a single leading document that, you know, addresses everything, not just the shell or, you know, floor tile or water radiuses. It gives operators access to all sorts of knowledge and bits and pieces and how to put this thing together to operate your pool in a manner that preserves public health. It does all of that. It's not here to create mass confusion or chaos. So one of the great things about the MAC is this evolution, not revolution, which is another reason why I want to talk about cyanuric acid specifically, that 1 to 45 was kind of the preferred or selected change request, right, versus 1 to 20 or anywhere in between. Because of that, we want to evolve, not revolutionize.
Do you? Yeah. Trying to think of how to ask this. Do you know what the science was behind the research or whatever? How did they study to have data to come up with the ratio? Was it done in a, you know, was there research done in a lab? Was there research done in various pools throughout various parts of the country, or do you have any kind of insight as to how exactly they got onto that path?
You know, I wish I did, Dan, to be perfectly honest, and to be quite honest, it just hasn't really come up, right? Mm-hmm. So here's what I can tell you. There were individuals involved in this committee that had access to research from companies, right, that make the ISOs, that develop the ISOs. Now, those were proprietary, right? They weren't open to be shared, but there was a tremendous wealth of access to existing data, right? There were researchers on the committee that had performed research in the past and were chemists, right, with regards to ISOs and disinfection. Now, the model, I have to go back and see where they selected these particular models. And honestly, the lead on the model, when you talk about brilliance, a guy named Richard Falk, right? I'll go ahead and call him out. Richard Falk. He is in a world of his own, right? And this is not to downplay the other scientists, because they were all just, good Lord, they were brilliant, right? Richard just thinks in a different plane, and he is brilliant. So the model was kind of his brainchild on putting that together with input from the committee. And if anybody on the committee is listening to this and I get that wrong, I apologize. You know, I want to say that now, right? But yeah, I need to go back and look at that and see exactly where they pulled all of this from.
I think that would, like, especially once people hear about it, that's something a lot of people will ask about. Because I know, just the type of person I am, when something's said, I want to know what led up to it or makes it so that I understand it better.
Right. The why of it all, not just that it is, but why is it? And honestly, I think a lot of our listeners are that way. I think our listeners listen to us because we try to get more in depth on subjects. And try to give some real world examples of why Kelly and I might do things the way we do, and how you go from A to Z with as much reasoning as we can fit into a 4.5 hour podcast. But that, anyway, we're all about the why, and that would be interesting for us. So, but that's it's, you know, what
I find this addition of water and look at that article or study to see that alone.
Yeah, this is I love that someone has.
I'm looking it up, and so the MAC has a companion piece called the MAC Annex. Right. And the MAC Annex is where a lot of these interesting discussions are housed. Right. So it's where we look at the data, we look at the science behind it, where it's not just, you know, me on a podcast saying, hey, these guys are brilliant. Right. Not just doing that. But I would recommend, right, anyone who wants to know more about the science behind this, right? Starting on page 140, I'm getting very specific, starting on page 148 of the MAC Annex, and then going through page 160 or so. That's where a lot of this stuff is discussed and talked about.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a really good scientific reference.
Yeah. 148 to 160. So when this podcast does air, and you know, we talk to most of our listeners through the Talking Pools podcast Facebook group, and we'll have links to this podcast in there, and Kelly and I will make sure that we put links to the MAC and to the annex in there, so listeners can find that easily, and I'll try to remember that reference, the 148 to 160, so they can pull that up too. I know a lot of them are, and I'm pulling it up right now as we're talking, because I'm interested, which is you know, that's what this is all about. So
absolutely.
You know, I'd like to, and the one thing I would like to say is that having that ratio, which, you know, there have been ratios that have been talked about for pretty intensely for a handful of years now, 7-1, 20-1, 50-1, actually having an authority put science behind it and come up with a number that we can use as the guideline is, I think, very important because...
Yeah. Too many people
prior,
all over
it's all over the place. Yeah. And you know, so now we've got something. And if in the next cycle it evolves to something else because there's some science presented that causes the MAC to change, then I think that's what you were getting at earlier when you said it's about the evolution of it, that it nothing is fixed, nothing is chiseled in the stone, and if there's certainly a reason for things to be changed, that's what you're all about, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
If 3 years, 6 years, 21 years from now, something comes up and someone says, hey, you know what, that 45-1 is not good, and now we need to be, you know, 28.6 to 3.2 or some very easy math number like that,
then yeah,
it'll evolve to that. So,
and I'm sure it will too, right? So, you know, and that's, I made a challenge to the committee, right? And, you know, again, they're scientists, they're researchers, right? They're much brighter folks than I am. I made a challenge to the committee about, you know, settling the issue once and for all, right? And because, you know, the issue of cyanuric gas, and it's not new. This isn't something right. that just started talking about, right? I've been in the pool industry in various roles for over a couple of decades, right? 24 plus years. And I've heard about cyanuric acid my entire career, right?
Right.
And so it's nothing new, right? But I was reminded very, very quickly, near in unison by these researchers, that the science has never settled, right?
Sure.
You're not going to have the be-all answer. Because science is always working to engage and evolve. And it very may well be we find out that, you know, hey, we need to have a ratio of 1 to 1,000.256, right? Or 1 to pi or something like that, something crazy. But that's the cool thing, right? In that, you know, from a MAC standpoint, from a CDC standpoint, you know, here's what the science says now. Here's what the best practice is now. That's the conversation starter. You know, yeah. And you know, it's like you said, Dan, in 21 years, this may be crazy, right? We may be absolutely wrong, but you have to pose the question. You have to postulate. You have to engage, right? You have to have a starting point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's what we've got. We've now got that, and it'll be great for, you know, I'll certainly be using that in all of the instruction that I do in various ways, and it's our starting point, our reference point, and
yeah.
I love that we've got that, and thank you to Richard Falk and all of his co-scientists. You know, they're like the They're the guys. I mean, and gals. They're the ones that.
Yeah.
I can't do that. You know, Kelly maybe could, but
no. No, and like I said before, it's every person you talk to, it's different of what they believe is where it should be, and you know, I have my preference, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing. I just do it based off of what I've experienced, but to have other people's experiences changes the way I do things. And hopefully people will be more receptive to this than being like, nope, this is a truth I've never experienced. It's like, no, these people studied for long enough to give you a right answer. So,
right. Well, and I've been 36 plus years in the industry and in our own business, we've seen the effects of cyanuric acid and chlorine levels and when it's a problem and when it's not a problem. And, you know, the convention of, hey, you know, if you hit this number, you're done, and you have, you know, now you got to drain, you got to do all this other stuff. It's not always accurate. So, you know, I had a lot of very real world examples of where stabilizer at 130 isn't an issue in pools. Mm-hmm. If chlorine levels are appropriate and pH levels are appropriate and other things are going well. And then in other pools that are problemsome because of fluctuations in those things that the high stabilizer then does cause problems, then it's a problem. And I've always been sort of following that own experience that I've had, that it's not a problem until it's a problem. And having this ratio as a basis is awesome.
I think it's great that they are keeping in mind, like, the drought in certain areas. I live in California where, draining water is not ideal, and in some areas you can't even do it. So when you have these pool professionals are like, oh, you could hit this, you got to do it, even if they have no issues, that does become a bigger issue. And not everyone keeps that in mind. I know a lot of pool guys, they're just like, well, it got there, now it's time to drain. I'm the type of, like you are, when it's a problem, then we deal with it. Until then, just keep going.
Yeah, and beyond even the drought aspect of things, you've got, homeowners that are at times being told you got to drain your pool, and so they do, and they don't know that they shouldn't have done it when we got 6 inches of rain that day, and they drain it completely instead of draining it in stages and refilling, and they cause huge economic loss to themselves as a result. So the fact that all of those things are taken into account is just wonderful. It's not just, oh, this is what you got to do, and whatever you got to do it, you got to do it. There's considerations for the economic impact. That's great.
Well, and one thing I want to clarify too, right? And it's the MAC is a public health document, right? And its applicability is specifically towards commercial pools, commercial venues, right?
Right.
No plans whatsoever, no desire to jump into the residential world.
No, right, right. But with that, it does become a basis for what's happening residentially. Yeah, I mean, that it's just the natural flow of data in the industry is what's done for commercial is looked at and adopted to the residential end of things that we do. So, and to be honest, there is nothing on the residential side to tell us a ratio for cyanuric acid. So, we will all pull from what's done on the commercial end of things and adapt it, even though it's not the guide for residential. And I appreciate that.
That's what I did when I started. It was just residential. But then when I got into commercial and learning about how things work in that aspect, I started applying it to my residentials as much as possible. Because there's no guideline. And so what are you going to go by then what you do? When I first decided to get into it on my own, I took a CPO course to be my refresher, and just because I grew up in the industry, and see what I needed to improve on. And I just, like I said, use those guidelines. This is where the pH should be, and the chlorine, and the CYA. And even though there's no one coming in the backyard telling me you can't do that, or you have to do this, I still applied it in that setting.
Yeah. And the whole VGB thing that you touched on just briefly, when that came out, it was commercial, right? It was commercial. And although it's now part of what is in many, many areas adopted as the residential code as well, initially there was nothing residential on VGB. It was strictly commercial. And even the commercial, it was only if it was adopted by your state or municipality. So things come that direction, which is great. I wanted to ask you a question. You had mentioned early on barriers versus enclosures. Can you give me just a little bit of what you're talking about with that?
Yeah, so that was a definition change. Throughout the MAC, the terms barrier and enclosure weren't necessarily used consistently. So there was one submitter, there was a couple of submitters that did a lot of just kind of editorial work on their own. Nobody asked them to, right? They're passionate folks. But he and, this particular gentleman put out, I think, like 100 CRs, all editorial, right? And I might be a little high, but it was a significant number of CRs. But every one of them was more editorial in nature, right? He took it upon himself as a professional to try to go through and try to find the areas where there may have been a contradiction. So the barrier and enclosure was one of those things where he went through and submitted a number of change requests to clarify the language. So what is it, right? So it's making it sound all complex and jump, but really, you know, the enclosure is the space around the pool, right? That's going to be your walls, your fences, your, you know, the structures that inhibit access to the venue, period, right? Your entryways. Whereas a barrier might be you have a temporary closure of the waiting pool, right? You can still have access to the facility, to the venue, but that particular feature is closed for whatever reason. So then you would put up a temporary barrier, right? So the barriers aren't intended to enclose or prevent access to the total facility. The barriers are just intended to prevent access to a spa that's down, right? A waiting pool that's down, a wave pool that's down, or one that's not being operated because of no staff, right? Whereas the enclosure is intended to prevent access to the entire venue, if it makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Thank you. That I was just curious when you put that out there. Where actually, Rudy and I just initiated some conversation over barriers relative to the ISPSC concerning covers. And there's language in that the thing I don't care for at all. It says if a pool has an automatic cover on it, it does not need any other barrier. And within that code, there are barriers that are very deeply defined. You know, fencing, you can't put a 4-inch sphere, you know, nothing larger than that can fit through it. And gates that have to open outward and self-closing, self-latching, and the latching mechanisms have to be 52 or 54 inches above grade, and all the alarms on doors that open into the air, all these different things that if you put an automatic cover on, are gone.
Yeah,
gone. And that's the way the code is written. And I happened upon it a few months ago. And as I've talked to very well-respected professionals in the industry, builders and such, many of them weren't aware that that's actually how the code is written. And, you know, I'm basically making efforts to try and get that change, because I think that's a failure on our industry's part to truly keep residential is what we're talking about with this code. It has nothing to do with what you guys are doing. It just, when you talk barrier, it kind of struck a bit of a nerve with me that I'm hoping in the next iteration of the ISPSC, we can have that part of it struck. That I mean, they're great additional layers of protection, and we certainly need a lot of layers, but the automatic cover as a standalone, those of us that deal with them frequently know that they are never used the way that you know, the code is interpreting them being used. So anyway, I got off topic there. Sorry about that. But
sir. And you know, just to add on that, Dan, you know, whether you're talking about the Mac, whether you're talking about the ISPSC, whether you're talking about the Atmo, or any of the other, you know, codes out there, if anybody's looking for the perfect code that has no flaws, they're going to be looking for a long time, right?
Right.
You know, even in the German DIN standards, and I've never read it. I don't speak German, so I haven't gone through it, right? But the German DIN standards, which the Mac actually, you know, referred to a lot, are super specific and extremely detailed, you know, but even the German DIN standards, if you look hard enough, you're going to find something that slipped through, right? You're going to find something where someone's going to look back and go, oh, geez, really? And right. It's a right. Really small thing, right? And so I would just encourage your listeners just kind of remember that, right? No matter what code you're talking about, we're talking about a process, right? Where it evolves, it changes, and nothing's going to be perfect.
No. Well, and to that point, the ISPSC, if I remember correctly, if you go back prior to, I think it might have been 2012, maybe 2015, there really was nothing about barriers at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's obviously come a long way from when it was first put into print in terms of what it's including. And there, it's reviewed just like the Mac every 3 years, and there's conversation and you know, you can put in your own thoughts as to why something should be different and be heard. And, you know, it's the beauty of the whole process. So, yeah. And so, and with that, you know, the thing that I'm sure a lot of our listeners weren't aware of, because I wasn't for quite a while, is that, they absolutely can have no say in the CMAQ, right? Our listeners have no chance of being part of this organization and helping to drive the narrative, right? They're excluded. You've got barriers up that you will not let anyone else in. It's a very small group.
Christy, can you correct me, please? Because I'm obviously being facetious here.
Couldn't be farther from the truth, right? Yeah, no, this is, you know, we are very transparent in this process. We encourage everyone to get involved. You don't even have to be a member of the CMAQ to submit a change request. So we do want everyone's feedback. Of course, we want you to become a member. We want you, you know, to take the benefits that we have of membership. We've added a lot of really great things. You know, the team and I are just really striving to make membership as valuable as possible. Hopefully you guys have seen our quarterly webinars. The topics are just really phenomenal. We've had really top-notch speakers. And so we are really trying to make our membership more valuable, but we do want everyone to be involved. So everyone is welcome to comment, submit a change request, and, you know, have your voice be heard. You also do not have to be a member to attend our Vote on the Code conference. We'll be holding that in February in conjunction with the Association of Aquatics Professionals conference in 2024, February. We want as much feedback and we want to hear from people. So,
Well, and the cost to be a member is, if you compare it to every other organization, is very minimal. I joined because I was like, I found it, the organization to be extremely interesting and something that can really give back. And then when I saw how much it was, I was like, this is like nothing.
Right. Right. You're looking.
We want to make it accessible. Yeah.
And there are even student rates, which.
Yeah.
You know, in our industry, what. Can you be a member of as a student that, I that just amazed me, the links that you go to make it so accessible to people. And, you know, as students, $30 a year, right? That's all it is. And even, you know, individuals, and I know Kelly just recently joined, right, Kelly?
Yeah.
Am I right? $90 a year? Is that whatever?
It's actually your 3 year cycle.
The 3 year cycle. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, right. So, $30
a year. When you break that down, it's just a couple dollars a month.
No. I mean, everybody listening to this spends more in a week at Starbucks than would in a year covering your membership costs to be part of CMAQ. Although a minor expense, that money goes to great use, because the work that is being done is amazing. And I know a lot of that work is done without any direct cost too. You know, there's an awful lot of volunteerism that goes on, and certainly if any of us want to voice our positions on something. You don't have to pay to voice your position on something.
No.
Just said. So that's, I love that. So I read recently that CMAC has combined with another national event. So it's all going to be one big week come November this year.
February of next year. So it's been great. We have had a really amazing partnership with the Association of Aquatics Professionals. In February, we hosted our second MAC track. So we had a lot of really great sessions that we were able to offer at the AOAP conference. Dewey did a pre-conference CPO course. He was also part of the first ever director's school that they hosted at AOAP. And we also, this year, we hosted our first environmental health leaders forum at the conference. So, it was an incredible week. There were a lot of amazing industry folks, academia folks, just other, like, we had Dr. Beach attended the conference. He is retired from CDC. Dr. Dijak, executive director of NEHA. We had several of our board members come and participate. It was just a really great conference with, people from, public health, industry. It was just incredible. So we really are encouraging, professionals from all angles to get involved and participate and make it easy for people to attend.
And does this event move around? Is it different locations all the time?
It does. So we just came from Colorado Springs, and then next year it's going to be in Reno, Nevada.
Oh, that's close to me.
Well, yeah, that.
We're like 2 hours away.
Where now, Kelly? Where in California?
Sacramento. Oh,
okay, I grew up in the East Bay, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. So 2 hours away, so we can commute from your house. Is what you're saying? So
yeah.
Just everyone stay at Kelly's. She's got plenty of room.
Fly into where I am, and we can carpool. Yeah,
and we'll carpool over every day.
But hopefully, it's not snowing because it's February. Because we'll have to go over the pass. But they do have an airport already. In Reno.
They do.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, I just want to say one thing real quick. And, for those listening on the podcast, right, we've got a lot of service folks.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of folks out there that, they're balancing pools off the back of their truck and dosing. And, they're taking their operator courses and their maintenance tech courses. And they may be listening to this thinking, I'm hearing environmental health, right? I'm hearing management. I'm hearing scientist, right? One thing that we have to remember is the service folks at the end of the day are one of the largest users of the MAC, right?
Yeah.
Whether they know it or not, because, they're the ones that are looking at minimum turnover, right? Your filter meteor rates, when they have to change out a sand filter, right? When they're looking at the pump curves and total dynamic head to make sure everything is working like they're supposed to, and looking at pH and chlorine and bromine and everything else, right? And folks, just from a service aspect, there's a spot at the table for you. We want you involved. We need you involved. The tagline for CMAC is driven by your expertise, right? And basically, that's a statement to the entire industry in all segments, not just the managers, designers, and things, and the builders, right? If you got a truck and you have a hammerhead or a riptide, and you've got a route, and you're a professional, you're a qualified operator, right? You've got everything you're doing and you're holding industry standards, whether it's commercial or residential, right? You're an expert and you're needed, right? We need you. The MAC needs you. The industry needs you to participate. So I would just recommend and encourage, you know, our service folks listening. Hey, don't disregard this just because you're not designing, because you're not building, or you're not managing a 2 million gallon aquatic venue, right? If you're over a splash pad, if you're working on a spa, if you've got a single commercial pool in your route, we need to hear from you too, right?
I think it's great for them to be able to hear this on the podcast, because I know there's a lot of pool guys I've talked to. They're always like, well, they won't listen to me, or, you know, I don't know where they come up with this stuff. And it's like, okay, this is where you get to finally say what you tell your fellow pool guy that you run into at the supplier. Like, this is the place to get those questions of, one, how did they come up with it? But two, okay, you feel this way and you want to be heard. Here's how you can get it heard.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There have been a couple of committees that, you know, and I just say things, right? So Christy's going to cover her ears and go, oh God, what's he going to say? But, you know, there's been a couple of committees where we haven't had any service participation on, right? And I've got a service background. I used to work on pools and fun stuff, right? I've changed more than my fair share of pumps and filters and cracked filters and blew stuff up and had to fix it and, you know, got glue all over me and all that jazz, right? I've done my fair share of that. But, you know, I'm having to represent the service side, right? And bring into these committees, you know, hey, don't forget about X, Y, and Z, because they're not service folks. And I can guarantee you, I would have given my left arm, right, to have had someone who's just been doing a pool route for 10 years on that committee, just to where, you know, they're hearing it not from me, right, where mm-hmm. I can remain neutral, which is what I'm supposed to be, and not advocate for a position where we could have used that, right? So
That's great. And, you know, with you saying that, so Kelly, I need you to come up with another quiz. Okay. And this quiz, so we recently did a series that I think we started out with four, but ended up with six episodes on
electrical,
you know, all aspects of electrical. And this podcast is going to follow another series that we've started with pumps, filters, heaters, that kind of stuff. So at the end of the series, Kelly puts together a cool little quiz, and we have something that we give to a winner. So the winner of this quiz that Kelly's going to create, and we'll post it in the Talking Pools podcast group, we're going to cover their fee to join and be a member of CMAC for the next 3 years. And,
great, since the 3 years starts over this year, right?
Yeah.
So
they'll get the full 3 years.
So we're gonna try and help get more service people involved, since that's the majority of the people that are listening to our podcast are service people, and we're gonna throw it out there that we're gonna pay for your first membership. And we know that you're gonna renew after that 3 years is up, because everything is to be a part of it, and I'm whoever wins that, Kelly, we're going to track that person and we're going to make sure that they're involved, because that's what Dewey needs. He needs a break. He's doing too much over there. We need some other people to sit in on the service, you know, representing the service side of the industry. But
we definitely value our volunteers. We need our volunteers. I mean, they help drive this, you know, and so he's going to be looking for some committee volunteers real shortly here with the, you know, TRC, the Technical Review Committee, and then the TSCs with the subcommittee. So, we are definitely going to be looking for volunteers.
Okay. Well, and, you know, we've got a great group of a great listener base that are people that are extremely good at what they do, very knowledgeable,
And eager to learn things that they may not know.
Yeah, which is the best part of our listeners. So I'm going to keep reminding people that they need to get out there and get involved and volunteer to help you guys out with all of what you're doing to help this whole industry, even though it's, again, geared towards commercial. But we know it's having a big impact on the residential side too. And we're going to keep spreading the word and try and get as many people involved and volunteering with you as we can. So.
Well, we really appreciate that. We just really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk with you all and talk with your listeners. I know I've gotten opportunities to be on the podcast with Rudy as well. And we really appreciate your all support. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, with that, I've on behalf of Kelly and I and all of our listeners, we want to thank both of you doing Christy for spending some time with us today and helping to educate all of us as to exactly what the MAC is all about and more so how we can be part of it and be a big part of it. And we're going to do everything we can to make that happen. So thank you. Appreciate that.
So.
I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening today. I'm hoping you enjoyed the episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together for you. Listen, it's been a couple of wacky, crazy, screwed up years from pandemic to Poolmageddon. I just want you to know that we are all in this together. If there's anything that we can do for you, send me an email at talkingpools@gmail.com. Again, that's talkingpools@gmail.com. We're here. This is your podcast. We are the Pool People's Podcast, of the pool people, for the pool people, by the pool people's body. Podcast. This one is about you. So thank you for tuning in and listening. Do me a favor, click subscribe before you go. That way you don't miss an episode.